The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on November 5th, 1983 in the United States. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 8, Verse 25, up to Chapter 9, Verse 5.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Loke
Vastu
Buddhya
Grihadishu Brahmananti
Kama
Lobhe
Irsha,
Moha,
Vibrantha,
Chetasa,
Twanamaya
Lochito
Loke,
Vastu Buddhya Grihadisu,
Brahmanti
Kama Lobheshra.
Moha vibranta chetasa
Twanamaya rochite loke
Vastu
buddhya grihadishu
Brahmananti
Brahmanti kama lobhershya
Moha vibranta chetasa
O my Lord, those whose hearts are bewildered by the influence of lust, greed, envy, and illusion are interested only in false hearth in this world, created by your Maya, attached to whom they wander in this world perpetually. Text 26.
Adhyana sarvabhutatman kama karmendriyasaya moha paso dridhasachinno bhagavanstava.
Translation. O Supersoul of all living entities, O Personality of Godhead, simply by seeing you, I have now become freed from all lusty desires, which are the root cause of insurmountable illusion and bondage in the material world.
Si Sukha Uvacha Ittham Gitanu Bhavastham Bhagavan Kapilo Muni Ansumantam Uvachedam Anugraya Dhiya Nripa.
Translation. O King Parikshit, when Anshuman had glorified the Lord in this way, the great sage Kapila, the powerful incarnation of Vishnu, being very merciful to him, explained to him the path of knowledge.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Asvoyam Niyatam Vatsa Pita Moha Pasustava Imecha Pitaro Dagdha Gangambho Ran. Gangambhor Hanti Netarat Gangambhor Hanti Netarat.
Translation. The Personality of Godhead said, my dear Angsuman, here is the animal sought by your grandfather for sacrifice. Please take it. As for your forefathers who have been burned to ashes, they can be delivered only by Ganges water and not by any other means.
Tang parikramya sirasa prasadhya hayamanayat sagarasthena pasuna yagyaseshan samapayat.
Thereafter, Angsuman circumambulated Kapila Muni and offered him respectful obeisances, bowing his head. After fully satisfying him in this way, Angsuman brought back the horsemen for sacrifice. And with this horse, Maharaj Sagara performed the remaining ritualistic ceremonies.
Rajyam Angsumate Nyasya Nispriho Mukta Bandhana Arvopadishta Margena Lebhe Gotimanuttama.
Translation. After delivering charge of his kingdom to Angsuman and thus being freed from all material anxiety and bondage, Sagara Maharaja, following the means instructed by Aura Muni, achieved the supreme destination. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Sons of Sagara Meet Lord Kapila Deva. Sri Sukha Uvacha, text 1.
Angsumanscha tapastepe Ganga Nayana Kamyaya Kalam Mohantam Nasaknot Tata Kalena Sanstitaha.
Translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, King Angsuman, like his grandfather, performed austerities for a very long time. Nonetheless, he could not bring the Ganges to this material world. And thereafter, in due course of time, he died. Text 2.
Dilipas tat sutas tadvad asakta kalam eivan bhagi rathas tasya sutas tepesasu mahattapaha.
Translation. Like Angsuman himself, Dilipa, his son, was unable to bring the Ganges to this material world. And he also became a victim of death in due course of time. Then Dilipa's son, Bhagiratha, performed very severe austerities to bring the Ganges to this material world.
Darsayam asatam devi prasanna varadasmite ityukta swam abhiprayam sasam savanato nripa.
Translation. Thereafter, Mother Ganges appeared before King Bhagiratha and said, I am very much satisfied with your austerities and am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. Being thus addressed by Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges, the king bowed his head before her and explained his desire. Report. The king's desire was to deliver his forefathers who had been burnt to ashes because of disrespecting Kapila Muni.
Text 4. Kopi dharayitva begam patantya me mohitale anyatha bhutalang bitva nipayasye prasatalam.
Mother Ganges replied, when I fall from the sky to the surface of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I am not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the Earth and go down to Rasatala, the Patala area of the universe. Text 5.
King Chaham na bhuvam yasye naramoyam rijantyagham mijami tad agham kvaham rajans tatra vichintyatam.
Translation. O king, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead says,
sarva dharman parityajya mamekam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma suchah.
Quote, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Bhagavatam 1866. Excuse me, Bhagavad Gita 1866. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can accept the reactions of anyone's sinful deeds and neutralize them because he is pavitra, pure, like the sun, which is never contaminated by any worldly infection. Teji asang na doshaya vane sarva bhujo yatha. Bhagavatam 10:33-29. One who is very powerful is not affected by any sinful activity. But here we see that Mother Ganges fears being burdened with the sins of the people in general who would bathe in her waters. This indicates that no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds, whether one's own or those of others. Sometimes a spiritual master, after accepting a disciple, must take charge of that disciple's past sinful activities, and being overloaded, must sometimes suffer. If not fully, then partially, for the sinful acts of the disciple. Every disciple, therefore, must be very careful not to commit sinful activities after initiation. The poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept a disciple and partially suffer for that disciple's sinful activities. But Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. Even Mother Ganges fears. Even Mother Ganges feared the sinful reactions of the people in general and was anxious about how she would counteract the burden of these sins. Thus end the text 5 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 9, Canto 9, the Bhaktivedanta purports in the matter of the dynasty of Anshuman. Śrīla ISKCON could not fulfill Śrīla Prabhupāda's desire, more specifically myself. He told me that he wanted to come, bathe in the Ganges every day, if there would only be a direct road to the Ganges, right in front of our temple. But we tried various ways to get the road, but even till today we were not able to do that. Still the devotees have to walk across the fields. Although Prabhupada did go and visit the Ganges on a couple of occasions by walking through the fields with the devotees, he took bath. We know that according to the prayers of Vidura, wherever a pure devotee goes, that is a place of pilgrimage. Even the Ganges is purified. Here we can see that the Ganges is very concerned, afraid to come to this planet Earth. Because all the people will bathe in her to dump their accumulation of sinful reactions. She's worrying about how she's going to be purified from it. So if the Ganges is worried, about sinful reactions is very significant. Then how worried or how afraid or cautious should any other devotee be? You can understand that because Srila Prabhupada has accepted so many disciples, and his consciousness was, of course, unaffected. He was very powerful. But he gives a secret here, actually, that Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. So by being constantly engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord, that Krishna's mercy can be attracted. Even then, doesn't mean that the spiritual master doesn't suffer. He may not suffer totally. Partially may suffer. When Srila Prabhupada was very sick, in his final pastimes, at one point he showed his very thin arms. He became very thin in the end. He couldn't eat. A lot of problems. And he said, this is the result of taking too many unqualified disciples. Actually, Srila Prabhupada suffered for the sinful reactions of his disciples. He said sometimes, in Mayapur one time, he said that sometimes he had to suffer hellish dreams that Krishna would give him the reactions to the sinful activities of his disciples after initiation. In his dreams, and he'd be taken literally to hell. And he specifically said, this is because my disciples are breaking regulative principles. And I'm being forced to suffer excruciating trials. Disciples should understand that the bond at the time of initiation is something very serious. So for preaching, Prabhupada was very liberal. He was very merciful in accepting disciples. Just to allow fallen souls in the Western country to take shelter of him. Sometimes the other disciples who have recommended these candidates were not so responsible or expert in seeing who is actually qualified. Prabhupada was also a little disgusted that how lightly people in the West took their promises or their words, their oaths. I remember that in India once Prabhupada told us how incredibly honest, what great integrity the British had One time he made a deal with a British man when he was in business that he would purchase something at a certain time, would be this price. And after the deal was made, before the delivery could be made, the market price had changed considerably, as a result of which that Englishman was going to lose a lot of money. But nevertheless, he came through, and at the rate he agreed, he purchased all of the goods, medicine or whatever it was. Whatever the Prabhupada said, that while you're going through with this, you're losing money. He said, as our business integrity, we've given our word, we have to do it. Prabhupada was very impressed by that. He saw that now in recent day business, even a person has a signed contract, they break it without thinking and let people take me to court. But that previously people were much more conscientious that their good name and their word was worth more than money. Money you could get, but to get a reputation, to get a good name, to get that was something which was considered much more valuable than money. But now people have become so sinful. I asked one devotee who had promised to follow certain rules and regulations, but why you're not following? He said, one more promise in the water. So many promises I've given in my life, but this is one more. Very carefree attitude. Actually, that is probably the one single obstacle to break through, is that a candidate for initiation, a new devotee could, or even initiated devotees already initiated, could actually understand the seriousness of the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. Because even in the West now, such a serious contract as marriage, we say in India, South America, and most of the less civilized, modern term, less sophisticated nations, in terms of, you know, sarcastically I'm saying, in terms of the Western idea, that they consider very serious to be married. Normally there's not much instance of divorce. But here, without a second thought, they can break up. Even many devotees that Prabhupada personally married in fire sacrifice, after a short time, they would approach him and say, we want to get divorced, we don't like each other. Where in India, we were just discussing yesterday how once they get married, the social pressure, the whole culture is such that even if they don't like it, they would never give up their, you know, some exceptions now in the cities, but the tradition is that they would not, they just tolerate it. It's only one life. It's not worth going to hell for, to give up your husband and give up your wife. But now people, they're trying to squeeze out everything in this one life. They don't consider that there's going to be an afterlife or that they're is a law of karma. They're just trying to squeeze out, this one didn't work, I got another 80 years or 60 years or forever. They don't think they're going to die. To live, dump this and get someone else, come and get it, try as much as possible, squeeze out every bit of pleasure from this body. So they rack up, they accumulate so much bad karma. Incredible situation. So when even such as important promise as to get married. Every church is saying, until we die, was it in the death do us part? See, even my mother, she got divorced. She was excommunicated from the Lutheran church. It's considered to be the very orthodox, I imagine. Very bad. She had to go to some other church that was no more liberal. So people take promises very lightly. So when they take this promise of initiation, actually they don't realize that this is not a temporary situation. It's actually an eternal link. Unless there's a serious infracture on either side of that obligation, then the obligations, they don't dissipate, they don't end, they're there. Then the disciple, by acting irresponsibly, is simply creating a very, very precarious situation for the spiritual master. And obviously, if someone creates a very dangerous situation for a spiritual master, you can imagine that Krishna is not going to be very favorably inclined towards that person as well. If people can develop the broader vision that what is life? That this life is just a short life in our whole eternal life. And therefore we should act responsibly, considering that this is just one life in our eternal life, and this particular life, a very wonderful opportunity for those who want to achieve the maximum happiness in this very life. This Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very special benediction is that in this very life you can achieve Krishna consciousness, you can achieve complete perfection. Actually, it's a great benediction, because I don't know if the modern day people would be so patient to have to wait several lives. See, at least the opportunity to achieve it in this life is very attractive to everyone. We have to be very careful not to put the spiritual master into difficulty, not to put ourselves into difficulty. I said, because of over-attachment to sense gratification, a person becomes cruel and violent. By being so attached to sense gratification that they even are becoming cruel and violent to their spiritual master. What else can it be? Isn't it cruelness and violence if they break regulative principles knowing that it's going to put their spiritual master into difficulty? To willfully, intentionally put someone else into difficulty in modern law and in just an justice is considered to be violence. If a worker knows that the Boeing 747 doesn't have an essential part and willfully doesn't put it in, and it crashes and 500 people die, isn't he considered to be responsible? Violent neglect of his duty. If a doctor knows that the patient is too weak for the operation, but to get money, operates anyway, and the patient dies, they can prove it, that he knew that he was too weak. He'd be sued. So even just neglecting our, we know this is more than that, because we know that whatever I'm doing after I take initiation, my spiritual master is directly responsible for the reaction. So if someone, even in spite of understanding that, is so attached to sense gratification that doesn't consider what will be the reaction to the spiritual master, we can understand that person has become very cruel and very violent. If only out of ignorance. So even the Ganges is very cautious, we can see here, that to take so many reactions. Therefore our preachers, they're advised to be very cautious in accepting disciples. Why should it? We find that there are many devotees in the Sampradaya, like Lokanath Goswami. He refused. He will not take even one disciple. It's too much of a burden. I'm not strong enough. I'm not advanced enough. I just want to serve Krishna. I'm not strong enough, he thought. Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated soul. Direct associate Lord Chaitanya. He didn't want to accept any disciples because he thought he was not advanced enough. He had to be, even he was ordered to, he was reluctant. He didn't want to. In the absence of a direct order, he was completely opposed to accepting any disciple. It was Narottam Das Thakur was serving him, and when he asked him for initiation, he refused. He said, "No, this is your intention." He says, "You cannot. I will not give initiation. At least allow me to serve you." He was even reluctant to accept service because once he realized that was the motive. Narottam Das Thakur for years had to follow his spiritual master, hiding in the bushes when he'd go into the forest and find where he would go for his morning nature call. And he'd clean that place, put cow dung, make it very clean, put a water jug out, whatever. Said, "Who is doing this?" If he changed location, it would happen at the other place. He'd run back. When he'd be gone, he'd clean up the whole ashram for his spiritual master that he'd accepted in his heart. Because when he wouldn't accept willingly, then even somehow or another, he knew the service had to be done, so he did it. Finally, Lokanath Goswami, he became so curious that who is doing this service? So he hid, and he saw it was Narottam. Challenged Narottam, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm serving." He fell at his feet. He says, "Whether you accept me or not as your disciple, that I have accepted you as my spiritual master, and I am going to serve you my whole life." And that determination was so, that devotion, which was so selfless, and it impressed Lokanath Goswami so much that he said, "Your service has defeated me." Then he accepted him as a disciple, initiated. So there are basically three types of disciples, Srila Prabhupada explained. Uttam, Madhyam, and Kanishtha. Uttam disciple is a disciple who, even without the spiritual master giving a direct order that I want this to be done, can understand the mind of the spiritual master, that the spiritual master is desiring that this particular thing should be done. And he does that even without being given the order, and correctly. Of course, one should imitate that. It would require a considerable amount of experience to be able to come to that. If one would speculate and do the wrong thing, then you'll be in trouble. We've seen that Prabhupada sometimes in Vrindavan, he was relaxing, he would just go like this, just raise his finger. There was no way of indicating, of understanding what, then immediately the servant would jump up and close the window or turn on the light. Somehow they would just do exactly what he wanted. Sometimes they would do the wrong thing and he would go. Then, you know, but 85% of it, about 3/4 to almost 95% of the time they'd get it right. Once in a while they wouldn't, even in little things. Of course, if a devotee would do something which was in a crisis, which is the correct thing, Prabhupada would be very pleased. Even, you know, without asking Prabhupada. Of course, if they did the wrong thing, they're responsible. That's the uttam level. The madhyam level is that whatever the spiritual master orders that disciple, very expertly, very enthusiastically, very efficiently performs. Madhyam. To follow explicitly the order of the spiritual master without any deviation. It's the middle class. Kanishtha, or the neophyte level, is that one is trying to follow the order of the spiritual master, but is not 100% expert or capable. He's trying to follow, but is not always able to do it in the most enthusiastic way or in the most perfect way. That is the kanista level. The desire is there to try. Apart from this Prabhupada, there's another level. It's not actually even a disciple. That level is called Adam. It's like Naradam. Asuram Naradam. It's different. So Naradam, this is Adam disciple. Adam means fallen. That doesn't follow the order of the spiritual master. Disobeys the instruction of the spiritual master. It isn't trying very hard at all to follow the instruction of the spiritual master. It's in maybe name only disciple, but in practicalities, it's not actually fulfilling the obligation regularly. The irregular devotee. Still, because some of them, they're called Adam Shisha, they're still disciple, because at least they're recognizing some relationship, but they're not following, so they're considered Adam. They're fallen. They're not actually a real disciple in the strict sense of the word. Fallen disciple. So, if a disciple can give a load to the spiritual master, then we can understand a disciple by acting very nicely can actually free the spiritual master from any burden from himself. But that's the least that a disciple can do. And an advanced disciple can also help other junior disciples to become more Krishna conscious, more strict, more enthusiastic in this service, which would be a very great service to the spiritual master. If the Ganges has got some doubt about her capacity, we can understand that a spiritual master also will have a capacity, depending on how much mercy he gets from the spirit, from Krishna. Because Krishna is the only one that can ultimately neutralize. Just like you can put on some antiseptic on your sore, there's a limit how much that antiseptic, how many microorganisms, infections it can neutralize. If you just put one small micro part of a drop on it, will only be able to cover so many. So Krishna is unlimited, and he can give that unlimited potency to his pure devotee to whatever extent he wants to. Pure devotee, of course, takes the humble attitude and knows that he'll be at least held partially responsible for all the reaction. And if he's irresponsible, he can be held fully to task. So it's very serious. So Krishna has unlimited potency. The spiritual master has to be very careful. So if disciples are very expert in keeping their God brothers Krishna conscious, that means that that would enhance whatever capacity their spiritual master has for delivering more souls by not overburdening. If he's overburdened, that means that with a few fallen disciples, whatever mercy he's getting from Krishna is being expended. Don't look with one eye, please. And if the disciples are all very serious, then so many more disciples can be increased without being a burden on the spiritual master excessively. So to make this Krishna conscious movement expand, that means every disciple must be very careful to be strict, and they should try to encourage others who are initiated to come up to the same platform. Initiation should not be taken lightly. It's very serious, because it means if a person follows, that person is guaranteed to reach Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Might be time for one question. Yes? Bhakti Peter? There is very little that one can change the direction. A human being in the mode of goodness has got a slight scope for changing the direction within his material life. He follows 100 years perfectly Varnashram Dharma, the 100 lifetimes, then he could become a Brahma. But that means that gradually over a long period of time of perfect material pious activity, good karma, one could achieve a certain direction. But the whole process of yoga being transcendental is completely beyond and above this whole chain of material activities. Therefore, it's by the process of yoga, specifically bhakti yoga is the most powerful, but all transcendental yoga processes, they actually can change one's destiny. It's said, unless you practice Krishna consciousness. In general, what you're going to suffer and enjoy this life is already set, no matter what you do. But in material life, what you're doing this life will change what your next life is going to be to a certain extent. It's not that you get all the reactions for the next life just from this life's activities. You get reactions from many lives. So even if a person acts perfectly in this life, it doesn't mean that he's only going to be happy in this life because the previous life's reactions are coming. It doesn't mean that his next life is going to be only happy because it will depend on the other births that you've done before this. So after a period of time, if you act materially, say after 100 births, every life, no matter you tolerated all the difficulty, you just acted very properly according to the material side of good karma, well then, theoretically, there's so many other things that come up, you would become actually materially very happy, like a lord, like a Brahma or a demigod. But that's a very gradual process. And basically nobody can do that, especially in such a yuga like the Kali Yuga. Maybe in Satya Yuga, other yugas, it was more possible. See, but Krishna consciousness is completely beyond this whole law of chain and effect. What is accumulated for literally millions of births, of which say the last 100 are being credited to your present account, can be wiped off in just a moment by even a little bit of sincere devotional service to Krishna. And you can get a complete new slate. So that's not possible by any amount of material work and material, you understand? What's possible for Krishna, because he can absorb unlimited karma. Otherwise, no one's going to absorb your karma. You just have to work it off. There's a story about a Buddhist monk. See, the Buddhists don't believe in God. So they have to accept all the karma. They believe in law of karma, reincarnation, but they don't believe in God. So there's one disciple of Buddha called, he was a man-eater, cannibal. He used to go around and he would attack people, rob them and do different things. And as to just show that he would defeated them, he would cut off their little fingers and he would wear them as a bracelet. He was called Angulimana Asura, Angulasura. That he was, to say the least, he was a demon. But somehow by association with Lord Buddha, he became purified, according to the Buddhist history. And Lord Buddha convinced him that he should become a monk, and that the suffering and the misery in the material world. So he became a monk and he was begging door to door. You see, the one time somebody who lost a finger to him saw that this is Angulamana, Asura. He cut off my finger, now he's a monk, and they just literally tortured and beat him and killed him. And that was considered that his karma is caught up to him. And this way, next birth, he'll be a little better off. And after so many births of this type of austerity, he'll be purified, and gradually he can work his way up to nirvana, which is a type of material impersonal realization. So, the normal chain of events, if a person gets in human birth, they can actually decide to work in a certain direction, but it would take a long time. They have to work off all the karmas from the past. The special, you see, thing about Krishna consciousness, which the impersonalists don't understand. Krishna is saying, we read this slok today, sarva dharman parityaja mamekam saranam vraja aham tam sarva papibhyo mokshami mamcha. That if you surrender to me, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me, I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. That means all the karmas. That means that whatever that person's destiny was, that all the negative aspects are completely taken off just by surrendering to Krishna. And there's only Krishna can offer this. Nobody else can offer. Only Krishna, or through his representative, this offer can be made. No one else can make this offer. But Buddha never made the offer. You surrender to Buddha in terms of the material, his teaching that he was giving. He was giving materialistic teaching, even though he was an avatar Vishnu. They had to take the karma. That facility they didn't get. Even he was very austere. He was maybe more austere than we were, eating once a day, not eating after 12 noon. To be a Buddhist monk is very, especially in those days, was very strict. Whatever they put in your begging bowl, you'd eat, nothing else. They're very austere. Only wearing one cloth, a certain way, type of sannyas. Doesn't? That good karma does not neutralize bad karma. He was doing good karma. For that austerity, he'll get happiness if he wants to cash in on it. But it won't neutralize his bad karmas. That he'll have to suffer. But actually, by surrendering to Krishna, one gets rid of karmas. The Prabhupada once advised us, don't do any sinful activity. Don't create any bad karma. And don't do any pious activity. Simply serve Radha and Krishna. Don't do sin, don't do pious activity. We're not interested in artificial austerities, artificial charity, which is based on material karma. Neither we're interested in any sinful activity. We are aloof from both. We're just serving Krishna, therefore we're aloof from this whole chain of karma. That actually, within the service of Krishna, we can do the most work with the maximum benefit for the most people in this world without unless you're an unfortunate spiritual master that has unfaithful disciples. Hare Krishna.